Welcome to McGuire on the Wire, where you'll discover top stories and strategies in specialty tax broken down by our experts. You'll also meet leaders from across the firm who will discuss McGuire Sponsors' approach to common challenges faced by our clients.
Hello, and thank you for joining us today. My name's David McGuire, and today I'm going to talk a little bit about the prevailing wage guidance that came out covering how we handle the credits that might be extended under the new Inflation Reduction Act. And what do I mean by that? So under the Inflation Reduction Act, certain credits and deductions get expanded if they meet what's called prevailing wage guidance. And for some of that, there's prevailing wage and apprenticeship guidance and other things. And so as a little bit of background, the Inflation Reduction Act came out in the middle of 2022 as a shortened down version of the Build Back Better bill. So if anybody that's been following it, we've talked about it in other podcasts, we've talked about it in webinars and other things. The Inflation Reduction Act has a lot of environmental policies, clean energy policies, tax credits, incentives, and other things that were designed as a stimulus specifically for a lot of solar industry, whether it be green building construction, et cetera. Now, a lot of people have heard that a lot of these credits were expanded or made better or other things. And really what ended up happening is that some of them were, but in some ways they actually reduced the base credit. So for example, you hear a lot about the solar credit. That would be the credit under Section 48 of the tax code. Now, what had happened with the solar credit is for years it was a 30% tax credit. When I'm talking about the solar credit at 30%, I'm talking about the ITC, not the PTC. So the ITC is the investment tax credit. So it's all based on the amount you invest in the project. Now, for years that was 30%, and then it was starting to leverage down to 26% and getting lower. Now, if you read a lot of articles, you'll see that the credit was expanded back up to 30% again. However, the base credit is actually 6% now. And what happens is that base credit of 6% gets a 500% increase up to 30% if prevailing wage requirements are met. Same thing happens with things like the 179D deduction. The 179D deduction prior to the Inflation Reduction Act was pegged at $1.80 a square foot with increases for inflation. So by the end of 2022, it was actually up to $1.88 a square foot. Now, under the Inflation Reduction Act, the base deduction under 179D actually drops, and it drops to 50 cents up to $1 per square foot, but once again, gets this 500% increase if you meet the prevailing wage requirements. So now that means that we had to find out what these prevailing wage requirements were. So just a few weeks ago, the IRS issued Notice 2022-61. And this covers how people are to look at this prevailing wage information and how they're actually to go about looking to determine if you qualify. And this will determine if you meet these increased credits under these different provisions. Now, I will mention, there's a 60-day window on some of these, and I'll get into what that means a little bit later. Now, some of these require just prevailing wages. Others require prevailing wages and apprenticeship. And what I mean by that is under certain credits, such as the Section 48 tax credit, you need to not only meet prevailing wage requirements, but you also have to actually hire apprentices. And they get into what that guidance means in this in more detail. And I'm not going to get into all the nitty-gritty on today's podcast because obviously this is a pretty far-reaching guidance and we can't just speak to it over a podcast really quickly. But if you want to give us a call at McGuire Sponsor, we can walk you through any of it. Now, as I mentioned, certain of these credits require both prevailing wage and apprenticeship, and that would be things like the Section 48 tax credit or some other ones. And additionally, 179D requires that prevailing wage and apprenticeship requirement in order to meet that deduction. Now, other credits, specifically like the 45L tax credit, which is the tax credit for building energy-efficient single-family homes, that credit only requires prevailing wage. It does not have the apprenticeship requirement in there. So what are these requirements? Well, specifically, you have to actually now go on and make a determination as to whether or not you're paying prevailing wages. And what they say is that you have to go on the Department of Labor's website, and they actually specifically give the website in the guidance. It's sam.gov, S-A-M.gov. And you actually have to look up what the prevailing wage guidance is for that specific area. And they're very specific in this guidance. It's not just the prevailing wages. Let's talk about, for example, on 179D. So what is 179D? 179D is the energy efficient building deduction. So when we're talking about that, that's a deduction for building energy efficient commercial buildings, and in some cases, non-commercial buildings when it's being transferred to the designer. But when they talk about the prevailing wage guidance, it's not just prevailing wages being paid for the energy efficient portions of the building. They talk about prevailing wages for every different laborer or construction person on that project. So that could include not only the person that's installing the HVAC system, not only the person that's doing the installation of the insulation, I just stumbled over that, but that was for a reason. It also includes the installation of the lighting systems, but also the painters, the person installing the carpeting, the person that's doing trim work. And so when you start getting into all the different components of this, it's going to get a lot more restrictive, especially in non-union states. So this might not be a big deal in New York City when union labor is paid to a lot of construction. And it might not be a big deal on a lot of government contracts. But if you look at potentially someone that's building an industrial complex in the Midwest or a warehouse facility in Texas, it might be a lot harder for them to get these increased deductions on a 179D project because they're not necessarily in the habit of paying prevailing wages for a person doing landscaping work or a person doing painting work. And so as these requirements come out, it's going to be critical that we look at it. Now, this guidance gets into how long the owner needs to keep the specific documentation actually saying that they're paying prevailing wages and a lot of other things that go on to it. And so this is going to be something that people have to look at as they're looking at these credits. Now, most solar companies, this probably won't be a big deal because on the solar side, they're only doing one thing. They're installing solar. So they're going to learn about these credits and they're large enough that it's going to make sense to pay for. So when we're talking about a 30% tax credit, potentially up to 40% if you're using U.S. source goods, potentially even higher in certain distressed communities, that's enough to justify paying prevailing wages. However, when we start talking about the 179D deduction or the 45L tax credit, those might not be enough to move the needle to pay prevailing wages. So if you're not paying prevailing wages, you might need to be ready for this. Now, why did this guidance come out now? This was one of the first pieces of guidance that came out after the Inflation Reduction Act. There's a lot of things that we're still waiting on. We're still waiting on information on how a lot of these tax credits are going to work. So why did this one come out? Well, the main reason is a number of these credits and deductions had what they called a 60-day window. As far as I understand, it's all of them except for the 45L tax credit. And what that 60-day window said is these credits start getting increased if you pay prevailing wages. However, there's a 60-day window from when they issue regulations. So that 60-day window means if you start construction within 60 days of these regulations coming out, you're automatically grandfathered into the higher deduction or tax credit. So what these things came out, they came out in November. On November 30th, it was published in the Federal Register, which means that 60-day clock starts on January 30th. So any construction that starts prior to that is automatically grandfathered in. That raises a big question, doesn't it? What does starting construction mean? So for that, they actually go back to a couple different tests. Now, there are some questions as to whether or not we were going to the test for bonus depreciation, which is a 10% safe harbor, or what were they going to do. And what they did is they went to other provisions, and they did come up with a safe harbor, and they also used the physical work test. So what does that mean with the physical work test? Well, under the physical work test, if construction begins when physical work of a significant nature has begun. Now, what does physical work of a significant nature mean? That could include any type of construction activities, but it doesn't include those preliminary activities such as planning, designing, financing, exploring, researching, permitting, or clearing a site. And it does require that you maintain a continuous program of construction. So simply starting your construction, pouring a foundation, and then sitting back and waiting 10 months, you're not going to meet that requirement. But if you pour the foundation and yet you continue construction, then you will meet the requirement. Now, that's one way to look at it. But often people like safe harbors. We're accountants, or as I am, I'm an engineer that pretends to be an accountant on podcasts. But we like to have safe harbors because we like to deal with quantitative, not qualitative. So what's the quantitative way? Well, they put a safe harbor in there that's a 5% safe harbor. So what they say is if 5% or more of the total cost of the project has been expended and you make a continuous effort to advance towards completion, then you also meet the safe harbor. So that means if I have a $100 million project and I've spent $5 million or expended $5 million as of January 30th, I am going to qualify. So what does that mean in practicality? That means in practicality, typically when we're talking about, for example, 179D. 179D are typically done on large-scale construction projects. Construction projects of 30,000 square feet, 100,000 square feet, or greater. Then that means most people that are putting buildings in service in 2023 will qualify for this higher credit or deduction in the case of 179D. However, it's something that people are going to need to look at as they start construction projects in 2023 as they're planning towards how these will look moving forward. Someone asked me yesterday, well, what about 179D in the case of government or nonprofit buildings? That can be transferred back to the designer. And somebody said, is that fair that the designer doesn't get the increased deduction just simply because the owner didn't pay prevailing wages? And that's not covered in these regulations. Fairness is not really something that the IRS really looks at. They have to interpret the laws as they're written. And so in their mind, this was designed as a way to reduce the cost of that construction. So they're going to keep that prevailing wage requirement in there, even in those situations where the person taking the deduction may not control that. So what does that leave us with? And what we really want to conclude with is that we need to start looking at this prevailing wage as we're budgeting for what type of tax planning we're doing. So as I said, most people taking these in 2023, especially on the 179D and some of the other areas, will get this increased deduction. But as we're doing tax planning moving forward, we need to take into consideration what this could mean for people and not just assume people will get the higher deductions. These are relatively encompassing regulations, and it's not going to be easy for a lot of people to meet these requirements unless they are planning for it in advance. Now, that covers a lot of the prevailing wage guidance. There's still a lot of things outstanding. For example, I mentioned that this will affect 45L. There's still a lot of questions about what the changes on 45L utilizing the Energy Star certification and other things will mean for taxpayers moving forward. As that additional guidance comes out, McGuire Sponsel will stay on top of it and issue guidance to our clients and CPAs that work with them as that information comes out. I appreciate you listening today. If you do have any questions about the prevailing wage guidance or anything else that was covered in the Inflation Reduction Act or anything else that affects your clients, please don't hesitate to reach out to your McGuire Sponsel representative, and we'll go through it with you in person. Thank you and have a great day.
This has been McGuire on the Wire. Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed the show, be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and follow us on social at McGuire Sponsel to get more industry news and firm updates.